Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us here on the program. We come your way on Sundays at 7 a.m. and p.m., and we are also rebroadcast Monday mornings at 1 a.m., and you can also go to the archives at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, and listen to our interviews. We link with our guests, their websites. We don't reinvent the wheel. They have already done a fine job in their respective fields and the subject matter that they're dealing with. And today is no exception. Interesting program. I think you're going to enjoy it. It's an area that haven't really delved into, and it's an area that I'm finding myself in, a category, a group, if you will, of folks. Actually, I thought I was somewhere in the middle between this particular group, the Bobby Soxers and the Baby Boomers, but it turns out I guess I am on the fringes of Baby Boomerdom. Our guests today are the compilers, if you will. They're the ladies that put together a book which I think is really interesting, Clock Run Wild. Let the Clock Run Wild, I should say. It's a wit and wisdom from Bobby Soxers and Baby Boomers, and I'd like to welcome the I can't say authors necessarily because you ladies didn't write the entire book. Judy Scher and Julie Coburn, thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. And
I guess one of the things, I mean, I certainly am, I guess the term is young enough to know what a Bobby Soxer is. But even as I kept hearing the term baby boomer and they kept defining the range, I kept finding that I was somewhere on the outside. Because I was born in 1960. But it turns out that I guess I'm sort of on that fringe.
No. You're on that cusp, right?
On the edge.
Can't deny that.
Well, not quite.
Yeah. But we're going to talk a little bit about, of course, about the book that you've put together with various authors who are... Can we give an age range?
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
I think it's a real important distinction.
60 to 90.
60 to 88.
Well, let's just say 60 and more.
60 and more, okay.
Yeah.
Now, you compiled this, but your urge was to contribute or just to compile this? And what was the impetus towards putting this together in the first place?
Okay, well, how it started is I was taking a class with Anne Lowenkopf, mm-hmm. right before she died, at SBCC. And a lot of the people around me were saying, now that you're older, don't you feel marginalized? You know, don't you feel like nobody pays attention to you? You're sort of invisible.
Mm.
And I didn't feel that way, but I was hearing these comments. And then I went into this class, which was a writing class, and people were getting up, and most of these people were older, but there were some young people, but by and large older. And people were getting up and reading these wonderful stories, you know, about their lives. So on the last day of the class, before I went to class, I got up at, you know how you get up in the morning and sometimes something occurs to you. And I thought, maybe I should give a voice to these people who mm-hmm. think that they're marginalized. And maybe I should compile a book. So I went to class. Anne was by then not giving, her husband was giving the class. And I ran it past Shelley Lowenkopf. And I said, what do you think of this idea about having stories from older people, you know, with their wit and their wisdom? And he said, it's a great idea. You could have a series of books. He was so enthusiastic. And within the first 15 minutes of the class, he announces to the class that I'm going to do this book. I mean, I just thought of it 2 hours before. I didn't make a commitment, but he made the commitment. So meanwhile, I was in a writer's group with Julie, and we sort of resonated. And I didn't want – I had done other books. I knew she had done lots of books as editors and whatever, and we both had written stories as well. But I didn't want to do it by myself. I felt it would be kind of lonely. I had just moved here, So I asked her, would you like to join me in this project? And she was enthusiastic. Hence, the book started. That's how it began.
However, there are only about a dozen of the 50 contributions that are from Santa Barbara.
Mm-hmm.
They come nationwide. And how we managed that was that we sent out, it was kind of word of mouth. Also, we put a notice in Poets and Writers, which is a journal for writers. And the response was magnificent.
Mm.
Many folks in this age category have many things to say. And we were deeply appreciative of this because we wanted to glean from their long view as to what were the significances to their lives.
You know, the two terms that come to mind that describe the individuals, male and female, are the old crone and the wizard, if mm-hmm. you will, just mm-hmm. as a metaphor, just as a metaphor. Although I have actually known one or two women who actually have no problem using that term to describe themselves as an old crone.
There's one story that's called that, right?
And it's not a derogatory term.
No,
when
no.
you research that phrase, the old crone, that's actually sort of an elevation mm-hmm. to a higher station, if you will,
right.
of responsibility
right.
for
it's
community.
It's a symbolic
yeah.
period wherein a female
mm-hmm.
Graduates from being the youthful maiden and on now to the more mature, wise one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's one area we unfortunately didn't cover in our series in 2014 on Mythosophia, which was our series on mythology. And we went all over the place, and this would have been a wonderful area to delve into as well. You use the term marginalized, especially in terms of those over 50.
60.
Or 60, those over 60. I myself have felt marginalized, but not because of age. It was because when, for example, the movie reviewers would give you their take on a particular film that hadn't come out yet but was coming out, and they'd tell you, this is a terrible film or this is a great film, I would go to see that film, and I had absolutely the opposite response to whatever the reviewers said. You know, if it was a great film by them, I couldn't believe they said it. I don't know what they were watching, but this was terrible.
Well, one needs to know what they're addressing, what they're responding to.
Exactly.
What is the criteria?
Yeah.
You know,
I mean,
what,
we all could write reviews one
well,
way or the other.
Yeah, that's true.
Know?
But we need to know. I recall overhearing some comment about this, and they were saying, we need to bring violence and we need to bring sex. We need to really dazzle
mm-hmm.
and engage
yeah.
the viewer. Now, you do that once, well, what are you going to have to do the next time? I mean, what's down the road?
Yeah.
I mean, it's an endless.
Yeah.
And so consequently, yes, it's easy to feel marginalized if you have something that's sweet
yeah.
and calm and gentle.
Yeah.
And deeply insightful.
Exactly, exactly.
Now, I know that as we go through our lives, our perspectives change, our points of view, our beliefs, for that matter, shift and change. I've said this on more than one occasion, that my beliefs of yesterday are not my beliefs of today, are not my beliefs of tomorrow, because I'm constantly taking in input, if you will.
Right.
And that you two ladies made the comment about folks over 60 in particular, that there is a certain aspect of mellowing, certainly. But I always take umbrage with those who claim that if you were, to use political terms, if you were, you know, more liberal in your youth and your middle age, you're going to become more conservative as you get older. And I sit here going, no. And I always dislike those labels. I would share, for example, my perspectives on different topics with someone, and they would say, oh, well, you're so conservative. I said, no, that's just how I feel about that topic.
Right.
We go somewhere else and talk about something else, and I will be blasted and so
let's,
on and so
let's
forth.
Look just a moment about just human development.
Yeah.
You know, when you're small,
mm-hmm.
you're pretty self-oriented.
Yeah, true.
Right. And oftentimes for many people, it takes having a family on their own to make this rather radical shift to a new concept of selflessness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And until they're challenged to do that in a kind of society that we have, highly materialistic, who is interested in selflessness?
Yeah.
Too busy gratifying ourselves. Okay, but when you have a little new life, then wonderful new insights come. And so there comes a very natural shift. You say go from liberal to conservative. You're concerned about that little guy.
Yeah.
Hey, you're young. You want the fast car, the red car. Mm-hmm. You wanna be noticed.
Right.
You want to be somebody. But then you've got these little guys coming along. Hey, you want them to have opportunities. So what then, by nature, there is a tendency to withdraw and to promote the other. So there is a conservatism that can easily set in.
And yet I heard growing up, not so much from my parents, you know, they would, in terms of the euphemistic conversation about, you know, learn from my mistakes, you know, so that you don't have to make those mistakes. We do it anyway. And so as we're growing up, it's almost as if every generation, so to speak, repeats those same things. And it seems as though, gee, our civilization doesn't seem to really be progressing because
you know
we keep going through
that
same cycle.
You know, make a mistake once and shame on me.
Shame
on you.
Right,
but
shame on you.
Make the mistake again.
Shame on me.
Right. Put that into cultural context,
mm-hmm.
a huge context. And who was it who said, you know, repeated by, I guess, Winston Churchill and many more, you know, if we don't watch what we've done in the past, we are doomed to repeat it.
And yet we do. We do.
But we do not necessarily have to.
That's true. We do not.
We have choice.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Well, my feeling about that is, of course, how do we not repeat it is the big question.
Right.
And I would say you can go down the political area, street, but I have tended in my life, which has been quite long now and have many experiences, I have tended to look at the spiritual way of dealing with shift or change.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's going to come from the outside. I think it comes from the inside.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is my true belief.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of weird.
No, not necessarily.
Yeah, I feel that, you know, one of the simplest things we can do is just try within our own life and the little circle of our family and friends, if we could not fight them, if we weren't dysfunctional as families and individuals, that in itself would radiate out like a ripple.
Right.
As
I've said, I've grown up with five other siblings. I have a younger brother, two older sisters, two younger sisters, and then there's my parents. So eight in one household.
Right.
A small three-bedroom, one bath. Can you believe one bath for eight people? And certainly we had our conflicts, but when I start hearing those wonderful little holiday stories about, oh, geez, I don't want to go home to the family for Thanksgiving and that whole little dynamic.
Right.
I can't recall us having that. I'm not saying we had the Norman Rockwell, because that's just as dysfunctional in one sense to carry on long term. But we always seemed to work through our stuff. We never seemed to really hold on to it.
That's beautiful.
You know, and so I don't know how unique that makes us. There have to be other families.
I'm sure, but I think by and large, it's probably fairly unique.
Yeah. And so I'm quite grateful for that. But again, as I have grown, I mean, my exposure to religion in particular, not just spirituality, was one that really almost forced me to get away from the outer trappings and go in within. I remember I used to tell people, I'm looking to find a place on the planet that I can go to where I can find the solitude that I need. You know, if I could find Superman's fortress of solitude and nobody else could find it. But what I realized was that if I could find it, then so could everybody else. And then I was watching the new movie that came out, the documentary called Awake, The Life of Paramahansa Yogananda.
Yeah.
And I have read his book since I was 17, and I've read it in the last few years maybe a dozen times. And the thing that – I know this sounds strange. After all of the years of my searching and my awareness and all these different things, it dawned on me while I'm watching this movie because of, again, what he was always teaching. There is a place, but it's not out here. And nobody but me can get to this place, and it's within. Now, why it took so long for that to click, because we've always talked about that on this program, about going within, listening to the still small voice and so forth. I'm not sure if that has anything to do with just a phrase that I heard long ago. It's not when you get it, but that you get it. Because I was at the age of 33, conversation with brother, and I was sharing, and he says, well, my God, it's about time. You're 33 years old, about time you got it. And I shared with him, I says, it's not when I get it, it's that I get it.
Yeah, I don't understand why all of a sudden some people can really click into that and other people can't.
Yeah.
and I mean, that's when I start getting into words I don't really understand, and I say, it's grace, it's some kind of grace.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you know, I look at people who have it intellectually, they have the whole thing. They can spout everything, but they don't live it at all.
Yeah,
I don't know why.
Now, I'm not asking your ages, but the two of you are over 60. Am I correct?
Well over.
Well over.
Okay, then that's as far as we'll go with that. I am privileged to have lived the scant 54 years that I have, literally a puff of smoke. But I remember when my father turned 70, some 13 years ago, and I asked him at the dinner table, I said, so Dad, how's it feel to be 70? Because I'm telling everybody, I'm more excited about him that he's turned 70 and that my dad is still alive and 70, right? He says, well, I'll tell you, I didn't expect to be here, but you know, to live this long, but I'm glad I'm here. And now he's 83, and I'm sure feeling the same way. You know, he's using a cane, you know, not quite as mobile as he used to be, but still, he's getting out. He's having a great time. As I said, he was here in Santa Barbara not that long ago and just had the greatest time. And his sense of humor is still there. He's just having a grand time at his age. But I often wonder what thoughts go through one's mind. I mean, I'm still working. The three of us, we're still viable. We're still doing great things. But we all know it can't last forever.
Well, it's interesting. You know, I've tried to retire. I'm lucky at this point. I don't have to go out and earn a living at this moment in time. And I'm okay, and I really have a good life. But what I feel is essential is that you have some kind of passion or creativity in your life that gives you some reason to be here.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe you're just – maybe it's just to be with your family or your grandchildren. It can be as that, or it can be to write a book, or it can be anything. But I think you still need to have
something. Well, there's an opportunity to ask that very first question.
Why are we here?
No. What do I love? And what do I have a passion to do? As if you were young. Ask the same question again.
Mm.
Now, you may all of a sudden realize, oh, I've gone beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
But then maybe not. Or maybe there might be a new take on that original question. It's kind of being authentic, coming to know who you are, and giving expression to that in ways that can make a contribution and can be quite satisfying.
And you can also try things now, mm-hmm. and not be a great success or something. You know,
because it doesn't matter.
It doesn't
see,
matter.
That's
so much.
The take for me. it there is something that happens. You know, you don't care what people. Well, I never cared that much, but well, a little bit. That's not completely true. But you don't care. You're not trying to be somebody. You're not trying to earn a living. I mean, a lot of the stresses of the young years have just fallen off. I mean, if you're lucky enough not to have to earn a living. There are many people over 60 that have no choice with what's happened in the economy, and they are back working. But, you know, but some of the stress is gone because you don't have to prove yourself. There's something about the 40s and 50s. You're still in there.
You're still chugging away,
Yeah.
Well, I half joking with people that I enjoy what I do so much that they will have to peel my cold, dead carcass off the console. And the funny thing is that I was working consecutive games, and we were having these ball games that were going into extra innings, 15th, 16th, 17th inning. So, and the announcer on the other end was thanking me for hanging around like I was going to leave or something for these long games. So one of my other producers sent me this this image of a skeleton with cobwebs draped over an audio console. And, of course, he put the caption, "And we'd like to thank Richard Dugan for his service here in the 27th inning," and so on and so forth. And it was really kind of funny. But I kind of feel that same way.
Well, isn't that just another take on he died doing what he loved?
Yeah. Although there's one guy who he was one of these free climbers.
Yeah,
and sadly he fell from his perch. He lost his footing and he fell. I don't know how many hundreds or thousands of feet to the floor, and obviously died. And they would say that he died doing what he loved. And I said, no, he didn't. He was doing what he loved, and he fell. Falling was not what he loved doing. So I'm sorry. Yeah, I mean, that's splitting hairs, granted. Yeah. But I think that's something that's really important. So then well, let's take it to the next level, if you will. With that, you're doing now what you enjoy doing. You don't care what other people think. It isn't about success or failure. It's just about the doing. So
it's
now,
about the being.
What role?
There's a difference.
I understand.
Okay.
About the being. So now, what role do you play in our society this person
there it goes.
Who now?
Yeah, right. Well, that was the issue when this book first began to take shape.
Mm-hmm.
Of
well, tell me
what about this?
Yeah,
you know, because we are in the age now. We're at the place now where life has parameters. We feel the parameters.
Okay, and what are those parameters?
The natural lifespan.
Okay.
And yet, it's difficult, really, in a way, to come to terms with that because, as yet, we don't have enough aches and pains. We're getting there, but you know what I mean? It does have parameters.
Okay.
And so then it's kind of like a bumper car. You bump against that, mm-hmm. and you come back and ask yourself, oh, well, okay, am I doing what I am to do?
Okay.
And then one begins to introspect with that. And then you bounce back, perhaps all the way back to that initial question of what gives me passion? What do I really want to be? What do I really want to do?
I interrupt here and tell you that Julie is a writer. I mean, she's also edited this together, and we did write a story. But Julie is a real writer. She has to write. So, you know, whether it's for a project or something happens every day, she's writing.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike me, I write when something really fabulous happens and I want to write and it comes. But I'm a dilettante next to her because she writes all the time.
But there, I must add, allow me to segue to this. There is a point, though. When you say that a person writes, then has to write, or it can be said another way. They have to express themselves. Now, why do they have to express themselves? Because there is something that somehow or another has either come to them or that they have derived from an incident. Either it comes to them or they have derived from. In other words, it comes back to that business of meaning.
Mm.
Life's meaning.
Okay.
Now, can I schlep through life finding no meaning whatsoever? Yeah. Yeah. Lots of us do. Some of us overanalyze.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. oh, my goodness, that light went out. Oh, is that some message? Oh, come on, you know. and so, but nonetheless, I do tend to be responsive to life. And that goes back to my basic philosophy. And my basic personal philosophy is that, to me, life is an incredible gift. Mm. I think I am from some other place. We don't know where exactly. We're not given that. We have the veil of forgetfulness. But it's a great gift. And so I open it with great care.
Mm. Did the two of you ever, and a specific period of time, during the years of your 50s, did you find yourself being somewhat retrospective, looking back, not regretting, but just pondering those times in your life that maybe were more comfortable, more familiar, more warm, those times with people that you enjoyed spending time with, and boy, it sure would be nice if I could have those again, but you know you can't because maybe that person's gone or just the dynamics has changed both for you and them. Because I find myself now in my 50s doing that. Not so much living in the past, but every once in a while I'll sit there and if I'm not engaged in something such as this interview, and I'll kind of look up and think about that time back when I was whatever it was and the people that I was associating with and the experiences that I had. And I guess there's a sense of longing. I kind of miss those days when I was sitting with Mike O'Connor producing commercials in my office on my computer and I had the whole studio set up and everything. And we just had a blast and the great feeling that I had.
Maybe this
doing
is the genesis
things.
Of the whole concept of reunions.
That could be, yeah. You know? That could
I mean,
be.
How diligent we can be, you know, in gathering all the old friends
yeah.
together. But also, I mean, I'm sure that all of us have the inclination to want to relive the warm, fuzzy periods of life.
Yeah.
But you ask a specific question. You said, did we, when we came to the 50s, kind of go into this period of retrospective and analysis? And I think that in a sense that relates to the individual and how introspective they are inclined to be, or maybe how dissatisfied they might be in their present circumstance. And they're not at liberty to look to the future for that warm fuzzy, but they certainly can find some places in the past.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, when the holidays roll around, I, of course, think about family and what we used to do.
I think that's normal.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's just natural to do. Mm. But I've never been it's your own personality. I have never been a sentimental person.
Mm-hmm.
I just am not. I think from my years with a guru, maybe, always that focus about, you know, just being where you are. And because when I was younger, I was very goal-oriented and very into the future and whatever, and then very analytical with therapy and all that. Then I had 16 years with this guru, and it just cut that off. And it was like, okay, you know, this is, you know, be here now kind of thing, you know, the Ram Dass kind of thing. And so I've lost a lot of that sentiment.
There's also that feeling of wanting to find that precious space where we feel loved, accepted, unconditionally.
Yeah, yeah.
Our identity is secure and comfortable. Yeah.
But where is that space?
It's a tough world out there.
Again.
But yeah, it's that inward.
Right.
Yeah, that inward journey.
And you know, a lot of the stories in here have little spiritual aspects to them, twists to them, if you remember.
Mm-hmm.
It was the woman whose father dies and remember she sees him leaving when she's, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Farewell.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think that one of the things that I used to hear in my 30s and 40s about folks who were in their 70s or 80s was that because they're there in that space and they're not much long for the rest of the, for this world, that now they're going to say and or do whatever they want because they don't care anymore. They just don't care about the rest of the world. The rest of the world can go and, you know, screw themselves,
no,
you know, kind of thing.
Well,
and
they've
I'm going
to
say
full circle. Back
yeah, exactly.
To being
exactly. It's like, what are you going to do? Are you going to kill me? I'm going anyway. I'm
yeah,
right
okay.
near the door and
yeah,
kind of thing.
Right?
And I know that's not the case with everybody, certainly, but certainly it does seem
that's
that,
a kind of a bitterness that I think as we go along the path of aging, we want to be diligent in avoiding that.
Yeah.
Look for humor. Look for happiness. Look, it's a conscious choice
yeah.
but
to
be happy.
I agree with that. But politically, I feel, getting back to your thing, politically, I sometimes feel like it's up to my children now to get out and march and do the things that
yeah.
we did, you know, during the Vietnam War and all, you know, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And so in some of those ways, you know, when they did Occupy Wall Street, you know, I was happy about it. But I was happy that my daughter was into it,
right,
you know, that
right.
I didn't have to get in and do it.
Right. You so, had sort of a representative there, as
right,
it were.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I sometimes wonder about legacy. About 15, 20 years ago, it was a big subject with me in terms of, you know, what kind of a legacy we want to leave behind. And I'm talking about this now when I'm in my 30s about legacy. I'm in my 30s. Thinking about this kind of conversation, and now I'm in my 50s, and I am not one of the family who is going to carry on the family name through children, through progeny. My two older sisters, they have done so. Matter of fact, it's one of, again, and I'm not sure why this is, that I love these milestones, if you will, or these types of things. Until my great-grandmother passed away, we had four generations living. And for a period of time now, I guess maybe 20 years, we've only had three in our family. Until the great-grandniece was born. And now I'm a great-uncle, and my mother is a great-grandmother. And I think about what that great niece has to look forward to. And what kind of a world am I leaving behind, as it were? Is it going to be better for her? Is it going to be worse?
Maybe
or
we
is
can't
it just
speak
going
for the broader
what...
world, but we certainly can hope for the individual and their
yeah.
coping abilities.
Yeah. Because I
know. To look on to the. From a global perspective and wonder what kind of a world I'm going to leave is, I mean, that's kind of a disastrous perspective.
Yeah.
We don't know. We don't know. We can
yeah.
only hope. We can only pray.
Yeah.
But let's hope that our legacy are that those in our immediate presence, whether it's your niece or whoever, that you give to them the gifts of coping, resilience, creativity, and certainly a soul filled with love.
Yeah. Well, I know that they're getting that from my parents because my parents are sort of raising her while they're off at work. You know, they bring her over and they get she gets to grow with them, which I think is really kind of cool, you know. But just, I don't know why that it's
and that
just
can be a
so
wonderful
neat.
Legacy
yeah.
to them.
Yeah, exactly.
What a gift they're giving.
Yeah.
To that little great-grandchild.
I just find mm-hmm. it so extraordinary. And I haven't met her yet. I haven't been able to get back to see her. I've seen pictures, but haven't been be able to get back there yet for her to meet a crazy uncle, great Uncle Richard.
However, I will say that in listening to the stories of many of these folks, they are not tormented. They don't – now, you correct me on this. They don't seem – they've – come to that point in life where they've somewhat reconciled themselves.
Well, they may have a tormented story,
mm-hmm.
but then they come out,
they come out
the other
mm-hmm.
side.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. With
right.
acceptance.
Right.
Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's final stage.
Stage, yes, so dealing with
acceptance.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
We just don't fight it any longer.
Let the Clock Run Wild is the title of your book, and it is... It is Judy Scher and Julie Coburn, and we're going to continue our program here on Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan. We hope that you will, I guess what I need, before we go to break, is there a website people can go to not only maybe read little snippets, but also even order the book for that matter?
www.letthecluckrunwild.com. That goes to Amazon and to Facebook.
Wonderful. LetTheClockRunWild.com is the website. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, and we ask you to stay right with us.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're talking about letting the clock go completely nuts. Sometimes when I get up in the mornings, the clock strikes six a little early, in spite of the fact that then I have a 15-minute snooze that allows me to contemplate whether I want to get up at that point or not. We're talking about the book Let the Clock Run Wild, and the website, just add a .com to that, LetTheClockRunWild.com. You can find out more, not only about the book, you can order the book, you can find out more about the authors, Judy Scher and Julie Coburn, and we're so grateful that the two of you have joined us here in studio. I always love doing in-studio interviews. The two of you have an energy that is more akin to youth, if you will. I tell people that, yeah, I may be in my 50s, but my mind, I feel like I'm still 17. Now, if I could just get the message across to my body, things might go a little bit better. But nonetheless, again, I'm so grateful that the two of you are here. And we're talking not only about this work that you've put together. Is this the first Julie, you're a writer, so I'm...
I did bring this along. I did do a book that is related to this, and it's called Authentic Voices, Women of Insight. Talk about real life challenges.
Oh, I like that.
And
very much so.
These include gals from about 20 years old.
Okay.
On through to whenever. And so that is very insightful.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then when Judy and I took off with this book, then we were doing a somewhat similar thing in that.
It's a compilation of stories.
Right.
10 poems.
As
and
is
four,
this one right. also, a compilation of stories.
And I had done a couple of compilations beforehand.
Mm-hmm. You enjoy doing those?
Well, it's interesting. I don't read compilations very much, but I somehow got into doing them. It started when I was with Satya Sai Baba, and I did a book called Transformation of the Heart, which was 12 stories by devotees who were transformed by this being. That's how it started, yeah.
Wow.
I love to hear people's stories.
Yeah. Oh, very much so.
They're so wonderful.
Yeah.
They can be perplexing and sad, and yet they can be so moving.
I find that you can glean from their stories bits and pieces that might actually help you through your life.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. You know. And that's one of the reasons why we do this program. We lay out the smorgasbord and we let people take what they want and leave the rest. It's to me, it's quite extraordinary. I for myself, when I do these interviews, it's like Christmas. And there are these packages that I get to unwrap. And I get to go into a whole new world. Your world, Judy, and your world, Julie.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that whole aspect of gleaning the various aspects from what you share on these programs. And I hope that our listeners sort of take the same kind of tack as I do in that regard. It's interesting about writing, though. I remember starting to write, just put things down on paper, thoughts. It wasn't, from my perspective, it wasn't so much a journal as much as it was these philosophical concepts, I guess, is the better way to put it. Maybe even spiritual concepts that I was sort of learning as I was reading autobiography, as I was reading Ram Dass, as I was reading Gerald Jampolsky, as I was reading all of the different writers, and then subsequently interviewing the different people, Og Mandino and so forth, as I was growing up, that I would put down. And I shared this with someone, and they said, "Well, it's interesting, but you know, it sounds more like a journal." And it was at that point, for some reason, that I stopped. But then I got back into it again, and I'm going, wait a minute, what does she know? I mean, that's her perspective.
Well, you're doing
that's,
it for yourself.
Exactly.
Right.
That's exactly right. And so I know that there is a wonderful encouragement from writers to would-be writers to write. Mm-hmm. Just write. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about and do your best not to edit.
Right.
Right.
You can't do both at the same time. If you're writing, you're writing. Forget the editing.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then there's this side of extreme imagination. What I mean by that is, you know, they always say, write what you know, what you feel.
Yeah.
That makes it authentic. Then, of course, you move into the world of the novelist, and that's sure. a whole new world.
Exactly.
Where they're perceiving what other people yeah. think and feel and do.
I've had people yeah. come into the studio, and they're so nervous. So, I don't know. I mean, what are we going to talk about? Da, 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 da. And I said, for example, I would say to you two, okay, you've compiled this book. You've obviously read the stories that are in the book.
Edited them, Adler.
You're familiar with the concepts and so yeah. on and so forth. So guess what we're going to talk about? What you know. Hmm. I'm not going to ask you, unless you'd like me to, about the finer points of nuclear physics, okay, or and so on and so forth. I'm asking you what you know. Mm-hmm. And that seems to sort of calm them down a little bit. And so you're saying the same thing about write. Write what you know. And the one thing that we know more of is of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I think, I don't know if you experience this in your own writings or not, where something comes up and you're going, where did that come from? I mean, it's always been there, but it's almost like until you sort of uncover, peel back each of the layers, you don't get to that.
Well, that's not just in writing. That's,
right.
That's in life.
Just in life.
The story that I have wrote in this book called, I guess we renamed it, A Moving Experience.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how I came to Santa Barbara
right.
was all on an inner prompting. I mean, the whole—
You too?
Huh?
You too? That's how I got here as well.
Right. I mean, every yeah. piece was just, it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And people kept saying to me, you have so much courage. You have so much courage. You're moving from, I was in Virginia then, from Virginia all the way to California, and you don't know anybody, and what are you doing, and you're over 60, and all their fears, you know. And I said, no, it feels right. I feel finished here. It feels right. And the truth was there was no courage. I could not convince them it was not about courage. It was an inner knowing,
mm-hmm.
and that was
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish I was always in that place, but I'm not.
What
or
about
maybe
you?
A balance there.
Yeah.
yeah. Exactly. And you?
She has that
Julie?
All the time.
And me in terms of Santa Barbara?
In terms of Santa Barbara and
oh,
in terms of your
yes,
being
yes.
guided through life, for that matter.
Oh, definitely. Oh, my goodness. And, you know, that's what is one of the fun parts of being this age is to track your life.
Mm.
You can graph your life. It's really a fun exercise.
When I was 20 and I was working around a lot of folks who were 20 or 30 or 40 or 50 years older than me, and I used to listen to conversations and they would talk about the stuff that was going on, like I got to do my taxes, I got to pay the bills, and I got those types of mm-hmm. things, right? And I'm thinking, wow, boy, their lives are really complicated. Is it really that hard when you go out on your own and so forth? And I found myself out on my own. And maybe in one sense, yeah, it is a challenge. But I remember I used to think, gee, I can hardly wait to get older, you know. And I was thinking in terms of like 60, 70, 80.
Mm-hmm.
I made this promise of sorts that I was going to outlive my great-grandmother. And she was 90 at the time. And she lived to be 100. And as she began to age, I kept saying, and she's making it harder every day. But there was something about those milestones. There's something about milestones for me, like I was saying before, that are, for whatever reason, are so important to me, you know, in terms of reaching those places, achieving. And it's not like I have any conscious effort put forth to get to 100. All I do is have to stay healthy. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of thing.
I think that's fascinating that you are very sensitive to milestones. I personally am not.
Yeah.
And I think probably one reason that I'm not is I just, you know, I live in my head and my heart, I suppose, a lot. Maybe should do it a little more in my body. But, yeah, I just kind of let those pass me by.
Yeah.
But we're different.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
I respect that. You know,
one of the things that I find interesting about listening to that still small voice, those promptings, and in going through a personal growth program, I wrote down on this big sheet of paper that I will listen to and then in larger letters and follow the promptings, because what I realized was it doesn't do any good to listen if you're not going to do anything with the information that you're given. And so I kind of share that with people and say, if you're going to listen, then do something with that information that you're given, that guidance. Otherwise, just stop listening. Because what's the point, you know? But
Sometimes listening is – sometimes it's so strong that you have no choice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you have a compulsion, an inner compulsion.
Yeah, or something –
it becomes quite natural
Or sometimes it's just – feels like a voice. A thought is so out of left field. It doesn't feel like it's part of your world. And it comes in, and it's like, where is that from? You know, so you don't have any choice.
And when certain things happen in our lives as we travel through, I remember one year, and it was actually about 14 years ago, that I was laid off four different times in one year. And then in 2006, I lost my job, my wife lost her job, and there was absolutely no fear. And yet you would think the reverse would be true. Because, oh my gosh, I don't have the secure job. I don't have the regular income. And what are we going to do? And it's like, it just didn't bother me. And that's basically how we find ourselves here today in Santa Barbara.
And that is a message that comes through a number of these stories.
Yeah.
That hardship is very, very valuable.
Absolutely.
It makes us more resilient. It calms us down. We know that that things happen.
Yeah. That's life.
And right. that.
And as you get older, so much has happened already.
And that, that this too shall pass.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So in terms of trying to share these concepts with those who are younger, I mean, whether it be teens, 20s, whatever the age, is that valuable, or are we doing them a disservice by not allowing them to go through the process we went through?
Well, I think
you go.
Well, you know, the whole theory behind education, you know, the whole educational process is, you know, teach all you possibly can, mm-hmm. prepare for the unexpected, the inevitable. It may not be experiential mm-hmm. learning.
Right.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that to set aside. I mean, I don't know how we're going to deal with our math, learning science, learning, you know, a number right. of things if we don't study the theoretical first.
But if you go back to the individuals who discovered the theories, mm-hmm. what was their level of education?
Well, that's all relative, I suppose.
Because... You know. When I was, for a better part of, for lack of a better phrase, as I was playing the role of the heretic in my 20s and 30s, working for a Christian radio station, I was asking questions that apparently I wasn't supposed to be asking. I was told to go and read the writings of the founding fathers, who most of them I had never heard of before. And so it raised two questions for me. Number one, who set them up as the arbiters? You know, just because they came up with the concepts or whatever. But then I thought, well, wait a minute. Most of these guys had never heard of before. So in a manner of speaking, I sort of came up with these independently of them. So does that raise me to their level? You know, not to get overly egotistical here, but I just thought, wait a minute. This information's out there.
Yeah, wisdom is wisdom is wisdom.
Yeah.
Truth is truth is truth. Now,
and I have a right to ask the questions.
You do? Yes. I mean, that's... And that's the whole meaning of the trip.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Exactly.
But to be contentious within doing so, well, you're going to have some feedback then.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But when one considers that truth is truth is truth, one mm-hmm. can, I find it fascinating to study the greatest of minds, Buddha, Christ, mm-hmm. Et cetera, where do we fit? Where does our insight fit relative to theirs?
Yeah.
And wonder, well, how did they come by that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why do I not? Or conversely, if they have this insight, what might be its value for me?
Yeah.
Well, how might I groom that and incorporate that? And what will it do for my perspective on life? So consequently, I revere and highly respect the great minds in both religion and philosophy. Yeah, I do. Not that I have to embrace it all.
Sure.
No.
You take what you need, what serves you, and you move on to whatever the next level is. I guess my struggle has been also in, for example, I call it my primer, Autobiography of a Yogi, and I read when I was 17. And as much as I love everything that's shared within those pages and everything else that's around it, whether it be self-realization or there's another organization, Self-Inquiry Life Fellowship, that is, and I've interviewed the founder of that a number of times, I said, sounds to me like, you know, you're just another branch off of the same tree. And he says, well, yeah, basically, that's what it is. My struggle has been with allowing myself to be integrated into those people who continue to espouse this, because it was not something that I was raised with. I was raised Roman Catholic. And those are the people, if you will, that I should be associating with, so to speak. And that in spite of my great intrigue, interest in Native American spirituality, I'm not Native American, so I really can't have anything to do with that. That's where I struggle with my acceptance of being allowed to be included.
That's interesting. I find that very interesting because I guess one would want to ask, does one really feel that they have to have an institution or a community?
True.
I mean, sure, we obviously deeply appreciate people of like or similar minds.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important to people our world with folks that are as we would aspire to be.
Yeah.
But to feel that we lack something because we have this sense that we don't speak the right language, don't fit,
You mean ultimately all those different...
Nah.
I was going to say all those different dogmas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
But I mean, they're all saying very much the same thing in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately... I mean, I went through a huge path with the guru for 16 years. I was like a gopi. I mean, I was just totally into it, you know, and that was my world and whatever. And then finally, I don't know how, I woke up to, wait a minute, I don't need this. It's all in here. It's inside me.
Yeah.
Now I almost balk at going to things. I do occasionally go to a meditation or I'll go to a church or something and I sit there and it's nice. But I don't feel the need for that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if you do feel the need for it, then you should do it.
And how thankful we can be that it is there to
exactly.
go to.
Exactly. And sometimes you need to almost go back and say, oh, what, I need to go and sing some kirtans or bhajans. I need to calm down or go back to something I did 15 years ago, mm-hmm. you know, or 10 years ago.
So. Do the two of you feel as though... Mm-hmm. With, I'm just going to throw this out, a good 20, 30, who knows, 40 more years to go, should you desire, that you will have completed everything that you have wanted, or have you already done that? Now this is just playtime for you.
You want me to? I don't view that as playtime, but there's another way to say playtime.
Okay. Well, I do feel very content in my life, and if I don't want to die, I'm happy. I love all the things I do. I have a passion for dancing. Mm-hmm. You know, I still have that, and I have wonderful friends and family and grandchildren and friends and whatever. But I really feel fulfilled. It's so, in the Jewish tradition, they would say, don't say that. You'll be jinxed.
Yeah.
But, you know, they have all these things. Oh, knock on wood. You know. But I do feel pretty fulfilled. It's not that I don't get angry or don't have feelings or whatever. Mm-hmm. But in terms of, there isn't anything I want or need. So I wouldn't say I'm in playtime. I mean, but I like my life and I go through my life. And if I had to find out that I wasn't going to live more than a short period of time, it isn't as if I have a bucket list in the mm-hmm. corner that right. I need to do. And I feel really a lot of gratitude about that. I mean, enormous gratitude about that. And I do have a lot of this been there, done that. I mean, which I really want to get rid of in the new year. That's my New Year's resolution, to get rid of that. Like, okay, been there, done that, but there's got to be plenty else to do.
Yeah.
Oh, there's so only one thing that I'd like to add to that, if I could, please, is that, you know, there are quite a few studies now on the aging process.
Mm-hmm.
Good, important studies. And work that you and I related to as we put together this book and actually put Lawrence Pillemar, and put this together, and actually as we made up the table of contents
mm-hmm.
as to what was going to be the focuses of this. Foci is Latin. There were certain elements that came out, and that one was, as we go through life, this is what Dr. Pillemar was observing as he worked with the aging, was to work toward having no regrets on a very deep level. Come to that point in your life, at no matter what age you are, but most assuredly as you reach the older years, to be able to look anybody directly in the eye. Mm-hmm. Meaning?
Mm-hmm.
Just purify yourself as much as possible.
Yeah.
Be as honest. Be as forthcoming. Be as relaxed, authentic as you possibly can. And that third element was make a conscious choice for happiness and fulfillment.
Which means surrounding yourself by people of like mind, and, you know, mm-hmm. you can get really pulled
create yeah. that individual yeah. personal paradise. And it can be of any size.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
It can be in your own heart and soul, you know, in a room alone. Are you at peace with yourself, you know?
I came up with a phrase when I used to do interviews regarding the subject in general of, I believe it's gerontology. I didn't like the term senior citizen.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't really say anything, and it was almost, from my perspective, almost derogatory to some degree. So I kind of funded up a little bit. I said, call them seasoned citizens, because
right.
you
mm-hmm.
do the same thing nice. Like with a fry
Very
pan,
nice.
For example.
Mm-hmm.
You season the pan.
Mm-hmm. Very nice.
And I never even thought about it at the time that one day I would be getting close to that category. That's the other thing that is fascinating to me, too, is that different people have different ranges as far as what constitutes a senior citizen or a seasoned citizen, if you will. Some say it's at 55. Some say it's at 60. Some say, you know, and again, I guess it just depends upon
the person
and you know, that person's
and the
perspective.
Health of the person, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Before we wrap up the program, I'm going to ask the two of you my final three questions. And each of you is going to have the opportunity to sit and mull over your answer while the other answers first. So I'm going to sort of ping pong it back and forth. So I will start with Julie and ask you, who is Julie Coburn?
Oh, I love that question. For one thing, I want to remain open so that all my other identities have an opportunity to, to show themselves. You know, really, we can focus down in life so tightly.
Yeah.
In fact, I was just responding to, you know, how we do for New Year's. We get in touch with all our old friends. And, I was just kind of reflecting this morning as I was responding to them. We aren't necessarily one given identity. I mean, for goodness sakes, look at a lifelong resume.
Yeah.
Look at all the credentials and so on you've amassed and so on. But nonetheless, there's great fun in that.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Who is Judy Scher?
Well, I would say it much more simply. On the ultimate level, I am consciousness, and I really believe that. But I'm in this world, so then I am Judy Scher, writer, editor, friend, grandma, mom, all those identities.
And you wouldn't necessarily simplify it down to you are a spiritual being having a human experience?
Oh, okay.
That's
that would be a very succinct way of putting it.
Okay. What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now, Judy?
It's the wrong time to ask me this. Well, I just come off a very intense year, and not only this project, but another book that I'm doing is coming to fruition and whatever. And I'm finally released from my projects, and I've made up my mind not to make any decisions to do other books, and I'm just remaining open to see where the prompting comes. So I can't really answer that.
Okay. Julie?
Okay, here's what. I still feel that I have, a few books in me, but one especially. And the one especially has a working title called Instant Alchemy.
Ooh, I like that.
Now, Instant Alchemy, what I'm talking about is, and this is based upon the fact that I've been in education for 1,000 years, and plus linked to that question that you asked earlier, can we learn, if I understood you correctly, can we learn without, in a sense, being taught? I am in the process of developing a very small pocket size book that hopefully will, in a very few words, respond to many life issues instantaneously. Mm-hmm. In other words, I want to somehow or another, I'm playing with the formatting and how to express it, that when you open it up, so opens your heart.
Mm.
And you read that and say, oh, okay, I got it. I didn't have to go to my priest, my minister, the library, my counselor, my guru, but there it is, right there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always been there, and it's within me.
Sounds like fun.
Ah, it
yeah.
is. It is fun. I'm about 2/3 of the way through it now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I've been working on my book for 14 years, and it's a little pocketbook. I kid you not.
Okay, good.
So one of these days, I will finish it. Judy, who inspires you?
Oh, I'm inspired by who? Is this, you want a person?
However,
or,
you want to answer the question.
Oh, well, I'm inspired by many people. I mean, I was inspired by, of course, my that whole, my guru, Satya Sai Baba, by Gandhi, by my friends, by my my kids have been total inspiration and lessons. Now my grandchildren, wonderful friends, the beach. I mean, inspiration is all around.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the way I would.
And Julie, who inspires you?
Just allow me just to go backwards just a tiny bit.
Sure.
You know, raise your hand if you want me to stop, please, or just say, hey, no more of this. But my earliest memory when I was a little kid, you know, just coming into the age of, they call it accountability, I don't know whether I was being accountable or not, but was that I really had the sense that I was on a journey. I did not feel that I was here. And this was all there was to it.
Mm-hmm.
And my great quest from the earliest moment that I can remember was, how does this place work? Give me some formulas. Give me some rules of the game. I got to know, because I got to make it through to the end of this. And consequently, what I then sensed from an early age on through, that there was within me that sense of inspiration and encouragement. It came from someplace within. Now, am I not inspired? Does that mean I'm not inspired by people around me? Absolutely not. I'm very,
oh,
very
I have to add that. I mean, it does come from within,
yeah.
Ultimately, yes.
But I'm also deeply moved and inspired by dear ones, you know.
Yeah.
And, yeah. So, who inspires me? I don't know. The spirit of holiness, goodness, love, that is what inspires and moves me. Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's all around.
Well, I can tell you that from my experience, folks, these two ladies belong together in terms of creating the works that they are doing. And I would behoove you to go to their website, lettheclockrunwild.com, and check out the book. Check these two ladies out and get more information. Make contact with them. They're right here in Santa Barbara. And you can certainly get the book via Amazon. I'm curious, is the book available in any of the local bookstores?
Yes, yeah. Or Tekeloti and... what's the one?
Chaucer's.
And Chaucer's.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah. Yeah.
You can go into any bookstore and order it.
Yeah.
Great. I want to thank the two of you for joining us here on the program. It's been a great hour, and I look forward to hearing from you, especially you, Julie, about your book, and then the works that you may be doing down the road once you decide that it's time to do another project. So thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.